Hello, weary travelers, and welcome to episode 65 of Elves, Rings, and Nerdy Things. I'm Sean, here with my other co-host, Sam. Sam, how are you on a Monday evening?
Doing great. Yeah, looking forward to another entry into our H.P. Lovecraft mini-series. Yeah.
I am pleasantly surprised by some of these. A couple of them are kind of dulls.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But the last couple that we've done, I've pretty much enjoyed. Like, this Dunwich Horror is the one we're going to cover today. I was surprised. I enjoyed it. I think they're good stories that leave a creepy taste in your mouth.
They do, and I think this, I liked what he did in this one, and I think we'll get into the specifics, but first we should give a little bit of a plot summary. And I should say that you and I consumed the Dunwich Horror slightly differently. Do you want, I read the book in a collection of stories that I have. Do you want to explain how you came across the story?
Yeah, I am a very slow reader. So for me, when Sam and I are doing any kind of literature that we're talking about on the podcast, I need to listen to it because it happens at a much faster rate. So I'm on Audible looking for a rendition of the Dunwich Horror, and I came across, I didn't realize this at first, I thought it was just like a reading of the story, but it was an H.P. Lovecraft Society audio, like radio play. So it was a dramatized version of the story, which was super campy. And they were talking like they had, it was kind of like it was a 1930s, 20s radio play. So the audio had like a filter to it, like a tinny kind of filter. The people talked with like 20s, 30s accents, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, see, yes. Oh, no, look at that over there. And then,
it was an actual, it was an adapted teleplay or radio play then, similar to the, I mean, the BBC did this with Lord of the Rings.
Yes, and, but this is like modern.
It's a modern production, but they're affecting a 1920s,
yes,
30s style. Okay.
It was, like I said, super campy. At first, I don't think I enjoyed it, but then it kind of grew on me. But yeah, it was good. And then you'd have the, like, they'd say something dramatic, and then there'd be like, dun, dun, dun.
No, really? They went that far. That's fun. See, that's fun.
Yeah.
Was it free on Audible?
No, you had to, well, I subscribe, so okay. I get credits every month. So
how much would it be without the credits?
Oh, hell if I know. Probably a couple bucks, okay. I'd imagine. All of these short stories, if you listen to them on Audible, like all of the ones we've done so far, all of them were around an hour. Some of them are like an hour 15. I'm trying to think. One of the longer ones we've listened to was maybe like an hour 45. Mm-hmm. So very consumable in a short amount of time. My commute to work is about 15 minutes. So if I'm knocking off a half hour, I can do one of these short stories in like two trips to work and back.
Yeah. So. Well, there, I think that would be an interesting way to consume this. I read the short story in, I think some of his stuff is in the public domain. And so it's just available for free on Kindle. And that's mm-hmm. how I read it on my Kindle. But so the Dunwich Horror is described as a core entry in the Cthulhu mythos. And you mentioned how these stories are getting better. I think it's kind of funny that so far, I think, would you say that we have enjoyed all of the subsequent stories more than the Call of Cthulhu?
Yeah, because they feel like they're way more fleshed out.
Yeah.
And Cthulhu, the interactions with the great old ones in that are passive.
Mm-hmm.
Any interaction has been with somebody who's recanting a story that they experienced. And with the most recent stories, like Color Out of Space, you see like the interactions with whatever that great old one, whatever that entity is, it's still kind of passive because it's invisible. It's like something's happening to the environment around them. But in this one, you have like direct interactions with Yog-Sothoth, one of the great old ones. Individuals are very close to completing their task of like summoning a great old one to their world.
It actually, it kind of like turns into an action story toward the very end, right?
Yeah. Where, so Sam is going to give our brief summary. The Wikipedia page kind of narrows the entire story down into three paragraphs. So Sam's going to do his best to just give us a couple sentences for each one.
Let's go ahead and jump into that. So the story takes place in the fictional town of Dunwich, Massachusetts, and it centers primarily around a local family, the Whatleys or the Waitleys. And there is the grandfather, who's called Old Whatley, and he's kind of a sorcerer fellow. His daughter, Lavinia, who is described as an albino. And then her son from an unknown father, who is he's described as precocious in its truest sense, meaning that he is more mature than his years. So I think they say it. He ages really rapidly. He can talk really early. He just keeps growing and growing and growing. I think he reaches something like 7 feet tall or something like that in the story. And the idea,
like by the age of 10, like in his first decade, he's like 8 feet tall.
Yeah. And he's like speaking in complete sentences by the age of 2 and maybe learning other languages. We'll get to that in a second. And there's kind of an aura around the Whatleys or the Waitleys that you get from the other members of the town, and there's kind of accusations of witchcraft and sorcery and occult rituals and things like that. And I think Old Whatley makes some passing references to the true parentage of Lavinia's son being kind of an unknown entity. You know, it's not just some random neighbor. I guess it could also be like, was it an incestuous relationship? And that I think that is not the case, but that could be the rumor. Yeah. Anyway, and it becomes noticeable that the Whatleys, the grandfather and the grandson, are making these continuous improvements or changes to their farmhouse and adding on to it. And the grandfather is buying cows, and the cow herd never grows any larger, and the cows start appearing with strange open wounds. And kind of the years go on, and the grandson gets bigger and older and kind of more off-putting. And eventually the old grandfather dies, and the grandson tries to procure a copy of the Necronomicon. He goes to the fictional but frequently referenced Arkham, Massachusetts and Miskatonic University to try and gain access to their copy of the Necronomicon. Specifically, he's looking for a spell because the spell books that his grandfather gave him were lacking the proper pages necessary in order to open a door to the great old one deity or entity Yog-Sothoth. And the university denies him the copy of the Necronomicon. He then breaks in at night. There's a confrontation with a guard dog. The guard dog kills him. One professor, I think it's Dr. Armitage, is the professor who discovers the body, which then kind of melts and disappears and leaves like a weird stain on the floor. And they describe it how his body was actually kind of alien in its features and not very much not human. So this professor is then kind of going through the notes of Wilbur Whatley, that's the grandson, and kind of discovers what he was doing. And it turns out that he and his grandfather had been raising another this entity in their farmhouse, and it was this other, somewhat spoiler alert, this other scion of Yog-Sothoth. And so the professor gets a couple of buddies, and they go to Dunwich, and
they use spells from the Necronomicon, which is fucking dope.
They do. And so when Wilbur died, this entity was no longer being seen to. And so it exploded out of his house, this old farmhouse. It was completely invisible. So, and then it starts roaming the countryside. And so they just keep describing like, oh, all those trees were knocked over. And then there's these huge footprints and it's kind of meandering around the Dunwich area. And I think it eats a couple of families and basically demolishes their house and eats a couple of the policemen that are searching for it. And eventually these three professors show up. They have some powders or some potions, and they use those to make the invisible creature become visible for just a second. I think one of them goes insane because
it scares the shit out of a townsperson.
They're looking at it with a telescope, right?
From like really far away. And one guy sees it when it appears and he freaks the fuck out and he drops it. And then nobody else can like get it out of the mud to see it in time. Yeah. I thought that was really funny. That was good.
Yeah, there were some great scenes that we can dive into more of the details. And then, as Sean mentioned, this one professor uses a spell from the Necronomicon to kind of banish or destroy this entity. And it's revealed that the invisible creature, the eponymous Dunwich Horror, was a son of Yog-Sothoth, and he and Wilbur were brothers. So Lavinia, the albino character, gave birth to twins or fraternal twins, both of whom were fathered by this ancient
great old one.
And I think the last things to say is, oh, they were twins, but the Dunwich Horror looked more like his father than Wilbur did, and Wilbur was the one that could pass for human. So that is the short, long summary of the Dunwich Horror. And Sean, in our kind of pre-show, pre-recording chatter, you said you really liked it, reading the teleplay. What about it did you respond to so well?
I think now that they're actually getting into some of the lore and it's more active. Mm-hmm. If we had individuals in this one, Armitage comes to the realization that Wilbur is trying to gain access to the Necronomicon so he can basically summon Yog-Sothoth, summon his daddy to Earth from whatever space dimension that Yog-Sothoth inhabits. And you begin to realize in this one in particular how high the stakes are. Like, this could be like a world-ending event. And
there's some hints of that in Wilbur's journal, right? Where he talks about like, when the world is completely destroyed, like I'll be left alive and, you know, I'll be able to do XYZ, basically talking about how his dad's going to come and kill everybody.
Mm-hmm. So that, and like, it's so active in terms of like this old Richard Armitage. I don't know if his name is Richard, but I like to think his name was Richard. This old Dr. Armitage using a book like a Necronomicon to then cast spells and come up with potions and weapons that are able to fight a being that was created from the Necronomicon. Like, these are like action pieces that would be phenomenal in a current like film adaptation. But the entire time, like, I was just intrigued. The lore was developed to a point. And that's the thing with like Call of Cthulhu. I feel like if Lovecraft would have come up with Call of Cthulhu later on, it would have been more developed.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like such a young version of a Lovecraft story that it just doesn't do enough to entice me. And there's so much more in the lore of the last couple that we've read, mm-hmm. especially Color Out of Space in this one, that really draws me in and makes me want to know more mm-hmm. about the world that he's building.
Well, you get it's got everything you want, right? It's got the kind of the creepy setting out in the hills, the Dunwich, Massachusetts. And I think it even opens up with kind of like setting the geography of like, if you take the, you know, the left turn off this main highway, you'll eventually come to this area. Excuse me. And it's got the creepy family, right? And they're not complete shut-ins, rather. Like, the grandfather is coming down and like holding court at the general store, kind of bragging to all these locals about how messed up his grandson is or mm-hmm. how impressive his grandson is. You've got the grandson himself. The scene with the grandson describing how Wilbur goes to Miskatonic University. He's trying to get the Necronomicon and he breaks in. It reminded me of, did you ever watch Red Dragon, the Silence of the Lambs prequel?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's that scene where Ray Fiennes, his character, I can't remember his name. He's the Tooth Fairy murderer, serial killer. He like goes to an art museum and attacks the curator and eats the painting.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yes, like that's what I kind of had in my mind. It's like creepy, but very like earnest, on a mission guy. And so that was fun. And then you have the scenes with Dr. Armitage, and he's like come into possession of the diaries of Wilbur. Because once Wilbur died, I think Lavinia had also died. And so there's basically
Lavinia disappears.
Yeah,
there's a moment of her going to the general store, like afraid, and talks to like two ladies who are in the general store, and then she ends up leaving, and then they never see her again.
Okay,
so I think you're led to believe that like this creature like is eats
her, probably. Yeah. And I think it's also heavily implied that the creature was drinking the blood of all those cows. So it's and then he basically eats those families. So yeah, it's not surprising that. Lavinia. It wouldn't be surprising if Lavinia were consumed by the Dunwich horror. But then, so he comes into possession of Wilbur's diaries, the professor does, and he's like kind of pouring through them and he has to crack the cipher. And that whole scene was so like, just, it was great. Just kind of describing that process and how he kind of became manic and wouldn't eat and was staying up late and his wife was worrying about him. It was just really well developed. And not, I think to your point with the Call of Cthulhu, all of that stuff, those same elements were there, but they weren't developed and reinforced enough. And here it was, and it really added to the atmosphere.
Yeah. Cause he even says when he's talking to his wife, Dr. Armitage, his wife goes, if you keep at this, it's going to kill you. And he goes, it might. And he keeps going anyway, because he has to know like what's going on. And yeah, just the stakes were high. And it developed. So yeah, just the progression from just a creepy family in the middle of Massachusetts to now one of those family members is trying to uncover secrets located within this ancient book of witchcraft, to the guy who curates that book going, holy shit, he's trying to really summon something. And then they have to go fight it. Like that's the clear progression, like that plot and story arc is engaging. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I just got so jazzed from the radio play.
I mean, I kind of want to go listen to that because it would be fun to hear a dramatic interpretation of this, because this story, unlike others where the narrator is involved in the action somehow. So in The Whisperer in Darkness, we had the narrator was one of the correspondents that in the exchange of letters that formed the basis of the story. And similar to the Call of Cthulhu, where it was, you know, taken from the notes of this deceased person. So you know that they were directly involved. This is just a third person, somewhat omniscient narrator, limited narrator. And we're getting all of these scenes described. And so you can do things in a slightly different way, which is great because you get to spend time with the villains, for lack of a better term, right? You spend a lot of time with them, which I really appreciate it, which is not something that you get in Call of Cthulhu specifically, Whisperer in the Dark. Those stories are really told from the perspective of regular humans coming into interaction with these entities. But here you get a lot more of the evil characters, you know, to be simplistic about it. Okay, there were a few other things that I wanted to touch about. Did the radio play involve the whippoorwills at all, the birds?
It did, yeah.
Yeah.
When the grandfather dies, creepy Wilbur says, "Well, they weren't able to get his souls." And that's the thing in the radio play. Wilbur, once he hits like adulthood, sounds like, "Put the lotion on its skin or else it gets
it." There we go.
Like that,
our second reference to Silence of the Lambs.
No, I'm serious though. Like every time Wilbur spoke, I was like, "Ugh, that's creepy." And then they describe him as like this 8 foot tall Goliath of a creepy man. And then, yeah, But yeah, they do reference the.
Okay. Yeah, so that was just a fun kind of thing of kind of building the atmosphere of this area where you have these whippoorwills, these birds that are supposedly kind of the couriers of souls of dead people who, like, they'll intercept them, or they'll, you know, they're somehow involved with death of the local residents. And then you also had all of the stone circles and stone pillars at the tops of the hills surrounding the area, which is one of these hills is the location where the final confrontation happens, and the Whatleys are going up there periodically to commune with Yog-Sothoth. And one can imagine that might have been where Lavinia had her, you know, fateful meeting with Yog-Sothoth that resulted in Wilbur and the Dunwich Horde being conceived. So there's so many great little moments. This is a really enjoyable story, and I'm glad that there's a different interpretation of it out there that we can go and get. And then, I guess, did you have anything else to add before we kind of wrap up?
No, I'm just happy that we decided to do this, because all of these different short stories, I had heard of them in passing, but I had never read any of them. So even if nobody listens to these episodes, this has been great for me to be able to go through and finally say that I've read some of these. And one of my Kickstarters that I back all the time, they do Lovecraft themed dice. So I have a Call of Cthulhu dice set. They also have like Yog-Sothoth and a couple of the others, but now I know what they're referencing. So this is pretty great for me. Uh-huh. And this is the first one that I would say I highly, highly recommend that you read this one if you're at all interested into the occult stories and things like that.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through the Wikipedia page, and I'm looking at the section where it talks about all of the influences that this short story had. I'm seeing, obviously, you know, Neil Gaiman, the show Dark Shadows, Fallout 3 and Fallout 4, which are video games that are on our radar right now. Let's see here. Harry Turtledove is an American author. Yeah, just some fun little tie-ins to kind of the nerdy stories, but also some that made kind of some breakthroughs in the wider culture. But yeah, overall, this is a really enjoyable story, a fun kind of evolution of the Cthulhu mythos. And obviously it has produced a couple of different versions that you can consume. So highly recommend reading a short story. And it sounds like you can get the teleplay, or the radio play rather, on Audible for some price, which is probably reasonable. I can't imagine they're charging too much for it.
I highly doubt it.
All right. Anything else to add, Sean?
That's it for me. Next week, we're doing The Thing on the Doorstep. Then Sam and I had a discussion before we recorded. And after Thing on the Doorstep, we are going to do our first video episode.
Bum, bum, bum.
Where we will be looking at some of the fantasy cookbooks that we have collected over the years. I have Heroes Feast, the D&D cookbook. I have the Elder Scrolls cookbook for Skyrim. Critical Role's cookbook, Exquisite Exandria. And then I think I have a Bob's Burgers cookbook as well. So Sam and I are going to, we'll probably have to do this on like a Saturday or Sunday afternoon when we record, so we actually have time to cook something. But we're each going to cook something from a fantasy cookbook and then talk about what we made and what we're eating. I don't know. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah. I mean, people love food. We can make some like weird ASMR shorts with it of us eating the food. Yeah. Find a whole new audience for this show.
That's what we're going to do in 2 weeks from this episode. And then in 3 weeks from this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about mead. So my main hobby, that might also be another video episode. I might make a batch, record it. Sam and I will talk about it and our histories and love of mead. That's it. Then we've got that exciting news that we talked about last week.
There we go, everybody. Then so
we will not disclose what that news is until we actually have it completed.
So we've got some fun stuff coming up over the next couple of weeks. And then we are really looking forward to having, it's probably going to end up being two episodes. We'll have two very nice, interesting, fun episodes that we will announce when we are fully prepared to do so. But this is going to be a fun couple of weeks at Elsrings and Nerdy Things. So stay tuned in. Thank you all for subscribing. If you are a subscriber, if not, please do that. We publish, you know, one relatively short, humorous, well-edited episode a week, and we're going to do some fun stuff over the next coming week. So be sure to subscribe so you don't miss out. That is all, I think. Chaunce, we can sign off.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.